Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Really, 007.
Finally, we've got to the Pierce Brosnan section of the show. Called The Love Is Not Enough. Pierce Brosnan, there's this whole, is he getting enough appreciation? People are getting offended that he's getting too much appreciation, but we're going to give him appreciation, repetition of the word appreciation. So yes, here we are tonight, and we're mainly talking twine, and we've got a message from the man himself, that he's left us a message, so we'll just hear from Pierce.
Well, guys, here you are, the anniversary, and you know, I think it's fair to say that you've illuminated people's lives with your good humour, your banter, the way that you've dissected Bond, the way that you have brought people in, special guests, fans in themselves that you've afforded the time to, which is wonderful. And I think, you know, at this juncture, it's only right that I perhaps give you a song. the song I've chosen, I think you know well. So if you will permit me. You're going nowhere. You'll stumble and fall. You're moving too fast. Can't shake it off. She's no good for you. She's no good. I'm sorry, I've realized these lyrics really don't fit the moment. The other lyrics go with that song. Anyway, it's only incidental music during a 1960s Batman fight in the bar. So we'll leave that there. But I hope the sentiment is right, you know. You love yourselves, guys. It's been a wonderful year. All the best.
Well, that was very moving, you know, to get Pierce, to get his blessing. That means a lot to us. Yeah, so on this section of the show, we've got Mr. Sam Rogers. Welcome back, Sam.
I'm overwhelmed at the moment by Brosnan being Brosnan. I wasn't expecting that at all.
No. But Brosnan was your Bond growing up on the cinema, wasn't he? So you're absolutely obsessed with him.
Well, I mean, I actually never saw Brosnan in the cinema when he was Bond. It was Casino Royale and Joe being the first, but I watched GoldenEye in the cinema for its 20th anniversary, I think. And that was amazing. And obviously since then, I've seen The World Is Not Enough in cinema too. So I feel like I've had at least a good share of Brosnan Bond in the cinema. But no, I think mostly for me, it was like we've talked about before, the video games with Brosnan in. And that's probably where that first really started. So, you know, GoldenEye and 64, Nightfire, Everything or Nothing, you know, all those where he appeared in those were really where he became Bond in my mind. I was going to say also, I found this lovely pillowcase, which I had in university. So I just found that the other week and thought I would just show it off today. So oh. I know.
Sam is in a dinner jacket as well, just for those who can't see. But that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Dressed as Truman Lodge. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We'll also bring in Lorenzo from all the way from America. Good evening, sir.
Heavy, yes. Hello. Love the song. Love the Brosnan song.
Yeah. Sorry to ruin it, but yeah, it might not have been him, but it's...
I know. It was still awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Lorenzo, yeah, you're obsessed with Pierce Brosnan. He's your favorite Bond,
yes,
right?
Yes, the Bond of my childhood, I always call him. Yes, I'm a big fan. I've been a fan of him since I... I played a GoldenEye 64 game. That was my first exposure to Bond. I didn't get a chance to go see his movies in theaters because my parents couldn't take me, but I did saw them all his movies on home video at Blockbuster, rented them. And I came obsessed of his Bond movies and loved playing his likeness in the video games. And it was amazing fun. I thought the guy did an incredible job, great leading man. And his portrayal of the character of Cardinal Connery and Roger Moore was, and all the other actors was fantastic. And being the action suave, cool Bond he was just, I just enjoyed it. And when he was let go in that break, it was a heartbreak as a fan for me because I wanted another movie with him.
Can you imagine another Bond with, would it like a 2004, a bit like Everything or Nothing? Would you?
Yes, that amazing game.
Yeah. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? Your favorite, though, it's The World Is Not Enough.
Yes, The World Is Not Enough. I love, obviously, but The World Is Not Enough became one of my number one Bond movies over the years. The reason why I like it because I think it's one of my favorite performances by him in that movie. He played Bond so awesome in that movie. I don't know if it's the direction or it's just the script or just they gave him in that film. He just come out so awesome with Bond in that film. And I just enjoyed it on screen. The chemistry he had with everybody in that film, it's just incredible. And the action scenes, he is so great and competent in action scenes. It's just so entertaining to watch. He's just
Bond that can do it all, isn't he? He's like a big all-rounder. That's why we love him.
Oh yes, he's a great rounder, and I just enjoy his performance in his films.
Yeah, brilliant, Lorenzo. Yeah, well, great to have you here. We've also got from America, we've got Shayla here back tonight, and she is in an episode which is going to come out fairly soon, hopefully, about Felix and the CIA. But welcome back, Shayla. It's great to have you.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. I'm Canadian, though.
As soon as I said it, I realised. So sorry. Yeah.
It's all good.
I'm trying to do too much at once in the moment. Yeah, great to have you, Shayla. You're obsessed with Brosnan, and I don't know, it's since we've been on social media talking about Bond, it's that sort of syndrome, isn't it? When you're the previous Bond, there's that period where you're not obviously talked about as much, but particularly in this like 3-year waiting period for No Time to Die, I think people have been looking at the films more and actually appreciating Pierce a bit more.
It definitely seems that way. It seems like they're all getting reappraised. And I would love if all of the critics who reviewed them back in the 90s when they came out would just watch them again. Because like I feel like, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes might change, the IMDb scores might change, because I just think that they're as relevant as ever, really.
Oh, Shayla, this is so good to hear.
Come on. Come on.
Yeah, and it's not just because Brosnan's in them, okay? Like, I think they're really solid films. Except Dying of the Day. I'm sorry, I can't really. That one's... They tried something.
Well, The World Is Not Enough. I think John said it in the Cinema Savvy review with George, who's here. He said that this is like the first time they took risks without pressure to take risks in terms of the plot and having a female villain. It was a bit different. It wasn't done Moonraker, so we'll go to, you know, let a more gritty Bond, we'll do For Your Eyes Only. We've done Dying of the Day, that's way over the top, so we'll better do something grittier. This was like Tomorrow Never Dies was a perfectly normal Bond film in many ways. Let's just risk it all and do something that some people might have thought was a bit controversial and have him sort of falling in love with a femme fatale and going pretty rogue. M was involved in the plot much more than before. And that's what he's saying, John, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, like, you know, there was the aspect that Tomorrow Never Dies was two years after GoldenEye, and it's a great film, don't get me wrong, but it is very formulaic in terms of it hits the beats that we all know. And then in the same 2 years, you have a film like The World Is Not Enough that takes some massive risks and goes completely left field to anything that's gone before. And there's no pressure. No one's saying, oh, Jason Bourne's come out and he's well more relevant. No one's going on about Batman being great or anything like that. It just comes from nowhere. And that needs to be appreciated. And I get that there's some cringy lines in the script and all the rest of it. I get that people can rag on Denise Richards. And
blah, I love blah, blah. Christmas Jones.
Yes, Lorenzo.
I don't see any problem with her.
Like, I'm a big defender of her. I never understood the criticism. She's a fun sidekick character in the film. I love her.
I'm with you all the way. And I mean, the thing with Christmas Jones is you've got to remember is that you're not really asked to invest in her. That you're asked to invest in Electric Ink. She is the character who holds that film completely together. There's three people you need to invest in. There's Electric Ink, there's James Bond, and there's M. And if you invest in
those... I will put Renard in this. He's super underrated, Robert Carlyle. Yeah. I enjoy him. I think he's a sympathetic character. A lot of people just don't understand his performance. Mm-hmm.
Well, go on, Lorenzo. You explain that, mate. Go on.
You see where how he's in the film, like he's saying he can't feel any pain. You know, he feels very sympathetic for Electra. He's very in love with her, even though she might be using him, you know, might be a rent. But he kind of feels sympathetic for the guy. But even when he dies, when he gives that look to Bond, like he tell him, thank you with killing me, because he was talking to him. He was talking about how much he's in pain and stuff. How he you feel sympathetic. It's potential in him. He could have been something great. They had gave him more to do. But I like the direction with him. I think he's super underrated. I guess a lot of people just don't understand it, I will say.
He was used as well, wasn't he, by Elektra? So there's quite a lot going on, not just Bond being used, but him.
Yes.
And I find too, because one of the biggest complaints is that, you know, he was built up to be so big, but then he wasn't. But that's what I think is cool. Like MI6 was running off the intel they had on him at the time before Elektra sunk her teeth into him and sort of changed him. So like, he's a disappointment, sure, but like, that was it's a cool thing because he's built up, but he's changed since all of the information that they had previous. So I don't know. I thought it was like a cool kind of thing. I don't have a problem with Renard either.
We've got three other guys who are, I'm sure, desperate to chat. Brosnan, we've got Evan Leiter here, Evan Kochner. We've got Evan here. Good evening.
How's it going? I'm also from America.
I was going to introduce you as from Canada. So sorry about that.
That's okay. Yeah, no, I'm happy to kind of jump in this World Is Not Enough segment. I listened to the deep dive y'all did on the movie, and it was a deep dive. I forget if it was five or six parts, but it definitely most likely would cover almost everything that I would say. And I was, you know, I was just happy to see that there is some love for the film out there. I watched it the other night just to get ready for this, and it was just the right amount of time for me taking a break with the film, because it's always a problem with Bond films when I've just watched some of them out. Like GoldenEye, I've just seen it so many times that it's sometimes hard to get in the moment watching GoldenEye again. You know, it was over a year since I last saw it, and I watched it again, and it was kind of like wow, okay, almost a new film. Just I hadn't thought about it, hadn't really examined it, and I forgot how punny it was, just how many puns and quips.
I love the puns and quips. In
so heavily loaded, just the first scene in Bilbao when Bond comes up in a few minutes with like five or six different ways of making fun of Swiss bankers. I'm like, it's like a comedy sketch routine where improv comedy, it's like, think of everything you can do to make fun of a Swiss banker. And he's like, okay, all right, just, you know, can you count to three? You're not good at giving people their money back. Ooh, this, World War II. And I'm like, wow, they really, really pack it in there. But then the whole movie is just, it's a weird inflection point for the series. I mean, because, you know, you've already mentioned that, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies is just a very classic Bond film in terms of hitting all the beats, and then World is Not Enough is kind of the start of really shaking up the formula, doing some things that just had not quite been done before. involving M as a character, which, you know, later on, it, you know, in the Craig era becomes dominant. You know, the four released Craig films, you have M heavily invested as a major character. And I do think that goes back to World Is Not Enough.
Oh, yes.
And doing some of those sleight of hand things where Bond has a really cool gadget and uses it, but then really quickly the gadget's destroyed and it's okay. Bond has to use his wits and his fists to get out of this. He can't press a button to make the problem go away. And they did that with the V8 in the scene with the docks. He gets the one missile shot out and then the car is like just cut in half.
One of the most painful hard deaths in
the series.
Purvis and Wade, geniuses. So.
Purvis and Wade.
Purvis and Wade.
Go on, Rob. Go. Dear me, yeah. Well, brilliant, Evan. I'm going to chat. We're going to chat some Dying of the Day quickly.
Can I talk about Dying of the Day? I've been dying to talk about I'm dying to talk about this movie.
We'll come to it shortly, Lorenzo. Hold that thought, sir.
Yeah,
we've got another people to bring in.
Yeah, we've got Cy. We've got that guy, Cy, / November Man. And we've also got Tom Mason. So I'll go to you, Cy, first. You obviously grew up in this era. Is Brosnan your favourite?
Growing up, absolutely. But I was certainly in the household growing up. There was a lot of Connery, a lot of Roger. Mum geared towards Roger, she loved him. And Dad, Sean. But certainly the big screen. And I remember at the time there was so much promotion on the telly, especially about that Thames chase. It was a big thing. And I think it's the fact that it was filmed locally, UK, got a lot of press. I feel bad that I missed out on Tomorrow Never Dies. World Is Not Enough was the first film that I saw. And it's quite an adult-themed film to see as a youngster. I was about 11, I would say, when I saw it. Or maybe a bit younger, but obviously I loved the film. There was so much going on. But now, I watched it last week in preparation for tonight. And there was so much going on, so many layers. But I jotted a couple of things down because it's probably been referenced before. When you get to the likes of Skyfall and things, to me it feels like they went back to The World's Not Enough when Skyfall came about. A lot of ideas. The shoulder injury, for example, MI6 under attack, use of locations, villain being deformed. Electric, I know it's just the ear, but then they revisit that, don't they, in Skyfall. It's definitely the template for the Craig era. I bet if that film came out now and Skyfall hadn't happened, things would be different. I think it would be treated a very different way today. But I think it's getting a bit of love. I think there's people out there, ourselves, we're talking about it, we like it. There's a lot to see, a lot to like. And I think Brosnan puts in stellar performance, like. Then again, he's playing off Electra King. That's a really layered character. You know, there's a lot going on there. And you get a bit taken aback. You see, you get Bond all tied up in the chair and stuff at the end. And I used to see Bond vulnerable, you know. I liked what they did with it. I think there's a lot going on, a lot to like. I'm not seeing the action scenes quite play out quite as well. Obviously, the Thames chase, hold that in high regard, a great pre-title sequence. But there's just something about some of the action scenes in World's Not Enough. I really like the drama of it all is a strong point, but maybe you'll agree or disagree, some of you, that the action scenes, I don't think, if Martin Campbell or John Glenn got his hands on it, I think it would have been top tier. I think the Parahawk scene, is that what you call it?
I might be the only one to say, I love the action sequence in Twine. I think the action sequence is super underrated of what I hear a lot of people say. I enjoy every single action scene in that film. The pace is good. The music in it is fantastic. Definitely that Carry Off Factory shaking by David Arnold is just exciting and fun. I love the action sequence in Twine.
I totally agree. The sequences are good, but I don't know. Maybe it's Michael Apted. He wasn't, I think that type of film to him was quite a big budget, big production film. Whereas I just prefer the flow of the action sequences in the other Brosnan films at that. But I actually had a question for Lorenzo and for Shayla.
Brilliant.
If that's okay. Yes. And what I was going to ask was, the Bond films are really British, like a really British film. And you guys are maybe more used to seeing the likes. What's the appeal of the Bond films to you guys? Because when I think of Brosnan in the 90s and things like that, Michael Bay and all these big, big action American films are out there. What's the appeal? There'll be a lot of British DNA in the Bond film. So what's the appeal of these films to you guys? If you guys are on, and Evan, of course, what gets you going? What do you like about these films? What's the appeal? I think we a lot of us are British and we like these over here, but it's what talks to you guys on the other side? What would you like about it?
Just the spy, like the spy genre. Like he's just so suave and like, and he's such a cool character that I don't know. I just, you kind of want to be him. Like, you know, you watch the films and even I'm like, man, I wish I could do all of the things that Bond can do.
When I was a kid, I thought, you know, Bond was just the most cool thing I ever seen, because I never seen something like a character like him before, wearing a tux and going on these missions and just doing all these cool things. It blew me away as a 8-year-old, 9-year-old growing up. The action in it was just so exciting and just you intrigued by it. You just couldn't get enough of it. And then you make that video game based off it and you get to play those scenes in the game. You, and like in the movie, you say, wow, that's super cool. I think that's like the spy stuff in it. Just, you have a great leading man like Brosnan and with charisma and charm. Yes, they got to go along with it.
I'll bring in Tom here because Tom, I don't know whether you intentionally are you dressed as Valentin Zukovsky there, Tom?
Intentionally,
it looks the white tux though with the black lapels, beautiful. You're a big Brosnan fan as well, and which do you think is your favourite of the four?
Tomorrow Never Dies. I think it's I am one of the few people who say like it's my favourite of all.
Tomorrow Dies my second favourite. I have a big love for that movie.
I've always kind of described it as it's kind of like what you've said in passing with it, which it kind of takes for me all of the things that worked about the Connery and the Moore and the Lathmy films and adds a modern bit when it kind of sticks it all in the blender with sort of a modern edge to it, and you get sort of a 60s, you know, 70s Bond film made in the 90s. And I think to me that just, it's really unique. I think I've said before that for me, sort of each of the four Brosnan films feel like a different era of Bond. They're so different. And I don't think, other than maybe Timothy Dalton, you can really say that about any other tenure, because they do have some sort of overlap. And I think having four different directors, all with their own sort of tone, like if you look at GoldenEye and Die Another Day back to back, you wouldn't think there was the same amount of time between them, basically. It's like, you know, Spectre and No Time to Die. I know we haven't seen No Time to Die. Maybe that's going to be as different as from Spectre as GoldenEye is to Die Another Day. But it's just, that's what I think the appeal of the Brosnan era to me is, just the variety of it. Because they're all kind of the same. And his performance changes, but he's obviously the constant. And then the surrounding cast is the constant. But they change so much. Like, maybe, as I say, Timothy Dalton is possibly the only, because License to Kill and Living Daylights are very different films. But there's such a variety in it. And that's why I've always kind of been a very strong defender of that era. Because a lot of people kind of decry as being, it's 90s crap and it's action movies.
Oh, no.
I disagree.
I disagree very strongly with that as well.
Tomorrow Never Dies. Well, I love a lot that movie. I'm a big fan of the Paris Carver and Bond relationship and the angle in that film. I think Terry Harris and Brosnan got underrated chemistry in that film. I love their scenes together. And I like the angle in that film. And I love Jonathan Pryce's Eddie Carver. He's my mentor because he's so over the top, campy and fun. I love his performance. And Dr. Kaufman and all the action sequence they shot in that film is just exciting and fun playing the video game based off that film too. Hey, I love Tomorrow.
Awesome.
Okay, maybe I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, Sam has written an article on License to Queer David's website recently, which is so good. It's like comparing World Is Not Enough to Honor Majesty's. And it's just, again, if you read that, it brings out even more layers to the film, Sam. Did you just tell us a few of the things you sort of noticed from comparing them?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things that I feel like, you know, because I owned The World Is Not Enough on VHS, and then, you know, I think even like the first time I saw it, I was like, there's just little bits. I think because there was one time where I watched that one after Honor Majesty's, and I was like, there's just things here, but you just would never write them down. And then I think at the beginning of this year, when I usually start writing things, I will usually just write notes on my phone. And once it gets to a certain length, I'm like, right, I need to move this to a Word document. For that article, I was literally just writing points all through the year. And I got to about 30 different points. And I was like, right, I do actually need to write something on this. But I mean, one of the main things that I think is important is that, you know, a Bond film isn't just great because of Bond or the actor. There's a lot of elements around that make it work. And, you know, everyone knows them, you know, the gadgets, the cars, you know, all the side characters, the MI6 regulars, the villains. You know, for me, one of the most important part is the women. You know, I think you know, they have such a different relationship to Bond than any other, you know, character in the films do. And I think Elektra is just so complicated, and, you know, she's got so many layers, and you could really, two different people could have completely different perceptions of who she is. And, you know, my whole perception is that, you know, when Bond is saying about, oh, Stockholm syndrome, whatever, that would be, you know, her fallback if she was called out on a public level, that, you know, she was kind of like forced into this master plan. But I think she's just such a sociopath, and she's so, like, for me, she feels so fame hungry that she wants to be well known, and she wants to be rich, and she wants this power, and she'll do anything to get it. You know, she will, you know, chop off her earlobe to make it seem like someone else has done it. She will go to those lengths. You know, she uses two of the, you know, strongest men at the time, Bond because of his reputation and Renard for his reputation as a terrorist. And so the fact that she can, you know, wrap them both around her finger is just really interesting. I think, you know, putting her side by side with Tracy, who I also think is very complicated, and you can also take, you know, a lot of different, you know, perspectives on her. I think there's definitely a good argument to say that they were kind of maybe directing Elektra and making her to be a Tracy 2.0, but completely, you know, strayed off to a different path. I think as soon as I realized that in my mind, it just made the film, you know, so much better. Like, I've always found it a great film anyway, but I mean, it's definitely, I don't think it's ever going to go outside of my top 10. And I think it's very underrated, and it's for the elements that perhaps aren't to do with Bond directly. I think it's probably the best Judi Dench Bond film in my perspective. I think it's just the right balance of utilizing Judi Dench as an actress, what's best for the story, and having her actually linked to the villain in that way is great. And like, has been what has been said before, you know, Skyfall does a similar thing with M and the relationship with the villain, but I kind of prefer how it's done in The World Is Not Enough. I think, in fact, my only complaint is that I would love to just see a bit more between Sophie Marceau and Judi Dench, because I feel like there's probably a bit more. And I think,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Elektra could be so resentful over M making that decision of telling her father, you know, don't bail her out. You know, I just think there's so much there. And really, the article goes into a lot about Elektra, but also just the other similarities, you know, like what Shayla was saying about Renard being, you know, a fake out villain, really. Like, he's promoted to be it. He has a similar eye deformity as Blofeld. He's bald. He has this, you know, impossible power that all these villains have. But he's actually a puppet. You know, he's not that. You know, stuff like, you know, the unreleased song by Straw, you know, the demo where, you know, we have all the time in the world. It makes you think, what were the producers pitching out to people who were creating this film? You know, some of the costume design, there's so many elements that link that back to Honor Majesty's that I just think it's not coincidental. So that's really what that goes into. But yeah, just as a film, I think it's a great film. I think Bronson Zero is relatively strong. I think GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, and The World Is Not Enough are three great films. Die Another Day is not, in my opinion. Yeah, I think he did a great job with what he had. And I think a lot of it is to do with scripts and stuff. And I think definitely at the tail end, the script let him and everyone else down. So it's a shame that he didn't get to, you know, do a fifth one. It's a shame that he got let go. But I'm very happy with the output that we got, even Die Another Day, because there's still great elements in that as well.
Superb, Sam. Honestly, that article, it goes into so many things. Some of them you will have realised when you're watching it, but so much, you know, like the outfit. I remember, you know, in the skiing scene, it's all sort of linked, isn't it? And an homage rather than a copy. And Elektra, let's put it, she's an original character. of course, in Order of Majesty, you've got the book to go out. So to create such a complicated character, time in the series when it didn't necessarily need it, is one of the reasons I think Twine stands out. And we'll move on there to Dying of the Day. And Evan, got to start with you. You know, you're almost infamous on Twitter because you're absolutely proud of your love for this film. And I love it, mate. I love it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of become a thing, and I leaned into it just because it's fun.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, I mean, just to put it in front, you know, I don't think it's a great film. It would not rate Bond movies, and its third act collapse, I acknowledge, and I think it's like just this spectacular like dumpster fire of a final 45 minutes of the film. But that being said, I enjoy it, and it's just a James Bond comfort food movie for me overall. I think they were trying to go for something ambitious. You know, I think there's a lot of consensus on the first 45 minutes to an hour of the movie being pretty good, with a strong pre-title sequence, going through the credits, doing, again, kind of a plot variance from the formula. We've never seen Bond captured and lose his 00 status. You know, he revoked his status, but not quite. You know, he was completely destroyed as a 00 through failure. We hadn't seen Bond really fall on his face like that before. And it looked like they were going to go to some interesting places. And then, I don't know, there was just some structural writing problems. You know, I think Sam pointed out, kind of maybe let everyone else involved in that production down. And I would not fault any of the actors. It's all in the eye of the beholder, but I think Halle Berry is hilarious in the film and kind of enjoy her. Rosamund Pike like nails it. And you kind of see, you can see why she comes back in Gone Girl, playing an Electra King based character maybe, and really nails it there. But I just think on the whole, if you look at Die Another Day, it's almost like what an MCU James Bond movie would be like, because it is so driven by quips and one-liners, a zany devil may care plot where it's just, you know, halfway through it, it just stops really just caring about being grounded. And it just flies out onto the limb of, okay, it's a space sci-fi superhero James Bond movie genre mashup, which, you know, it didn't quite work, but I think it's kind of a spectacular failure. And I enjoy watching it. So that's kind of where I'm at with my Die Another Day apologia, if you will. But so I would just say, if you think of the film, if you just really try to just enjoy the film, it's possible to do that.
Yeah. I think it's a very, very, I mean, there's so many things that if you look at them individually, they're like pretty cringeworthy and you know, not great. But I don't know, as a whole film, it's pretty easy to watch, and it's so easy to follow, like, as in the plot, you know, it's ridiculous, but do you know what I mean? So you can just sort of leave your brain at the door and stick it on, and, you know, for some people, it's obviously way too much and you know, way too far that direction, but, you know, I personally have a little bit of fondness for it in that regard.
Shayla, you're a massive Brosnan fan. But I've not heard you mention Dying of the Day. So what do you think?
Good one. I mean, I recognize that it's also, like, you know, not the greatest film ever created or anything, but I think there's so much positive stuff to pull from it. Like, you know, the torture stuff is really cool. They did some really cool things. The sword fight. I thought the Ice Palace was cool looking. I mean, like, it had some great stuff in it, and the car chase. And so I try to focus on those positives, and, like, you know, and Miranda Frost, incredible. Pierce knocks it out of the park. Like, I just feel like he constantly got better and better. And so I just try to focus on the positives. You know, I don't think the film should be thrown in the toilet for like a 7-second crappy tidal wave, you know, like there's more to it than that.
I appreciate two different tones in that movie, and I love it. I appreciate being the first half where it ends, and I definitely appreciate the second half when it goes over top. It's like a fun ride. It's just you on a fun ride, just enjoying what you're seeing and just being entertained. I love it.
Oh, God bless you, Lorenzo, man. Brilliant. God bless you, man.
I appreciate being a spy thriller in the beginning, and I appreciate being a fantastical, over-the-top, fun hour of a movie that is at I'm on the front row. I love the Madonna theme song. I think it's a fun theme song in the title sequence. I appreciate the different direction they did with it. I know a lot of people say a lot of negative things. Yes, the slow motion, the dialogue, and all the other stuff in Lee Tomahori's wherever direction you wanted to go with this movie. But over the years, I started to appreciate and just say, you know what? Forget all that and just take what it is. If you want your serious, gritty Bond film, you have Casino Royale and other films in the series. Dying of Day is like it's a two different tone of film. You got your spy thriller, you got your over the top fun. I think it does a good job having balance in both. My opinion, I love it.
Preach, Lorenzo. Preach, man.
And I love the kite surfing scene. I love the invisible car. I never understood over the years why do people hate the invisible car? I love it. If you can have a car turn into a submarine and spy on love me and praise that to the king gonna come. A car turning invisible is not a crime. That I thought it was cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yes. It's cool.
And you get to do it. Yeah. Then you get to stand building the video game, everything or nothing. I love the invisible car.
You're going about the invisible car, and we had a question earlier on from Gert, and he said, when you are contemplating and reevaluating these films, so let's talk about it from the Brosnan era, do you ask yourself sometimes, what would Ian think of all this? So let's go for
our dad.
Not Ian Pickup, Ian Fleming, both great in different ways.
Yeah. So more than Ian Fleming, I think.
I taking that a bit further, Shayla, let's talk about the Brosnan era. I actually think in some ways the most far removed from the Fleming books, but I would actually say the female aspects and some of the women characters are so well written in that era. Why don't you just give us your thoughts on some of those characters from that era?
I mean, I think the majority of them are just, you know, badasses. Like Natalia is just, she has her own thing going on. She's got her own mission besides, like Bond can't do it with Odor. Like he's not a hacker. Wei Lin, oh my goodness. Like she's just the coolest character. Like she's his equal. And it's so cool to watch them, like, you know, banter back and forth and one up each other, and it's just, it's awesome. And of course Elektra, like don't get me started on Elektra. I just played Elektra in a podcast. That's how much I love Elektra.
Did a great job at it. I saw the podcast. You did a great job at it. Performance Elektra. Love it.
Thank you.
Where can we hear that?
It's the Bond and Banter podcast, hosted by Jack Lugo. The first half is just, you know, you pick a character and you pretend to be them, and then the second half you talk as yourself. And I just thought, okay, I'm going to do Elektra because I just think there is so much there. She is such, like, she just has so many layers and she's so cool. And but yeah, I mean, I feel like Jinx kind of falters a little bit when it comes to, like, you know, well-written female characters in the Brosnan era. But I mean, she's okay. I remember in the theaters when I was watching it when I was 12, people laughed at the Yo Mama thing, and not like a oh god that was awful laugh, like a genuine, like it got laughs. I think the majority of the Bond girls in his era are just amazing, and I think they're some of the best.
Si, you're sort of nodding your head with some of this, but are you in agreement with the Dying of the Day and the whole Brosnan era summary we've had here?
It's a tricky one. I often wonder if Brosnan had just said after World's Not Enough, you know what, that's me, you know, that's all I'm going to do. I feel has Died Another Day tainted his films up to that point, because it's the one that people, I feel, if you're not talking about the positives of GoldenEye, you're talking about the negatives of Die Another Day, and the two in the middle sometimes get a bit lost in the mix. But Die Another Day is fun, say what you will, and that it's very much a Moonraker of the Brosnan era. But I really quite like the first half. The second half is a different film. It's such a bizarre film, Die Another Day, but there's so much. It's got that Arnold score that I like so much, and it's got a lot of the Bond elements that I like in it too. But had The World's Not Enough had people taken to it more at the time, I think they probably would have went with that again, maybe, and Die Another Day. You know, like at the beginning when he's tortured and captured, it's so brief, it's so short. Like, had they kind of went on that a bit more, I think it would have been a very different film. But then again, it was a 40th anniversary film, wasn't it? And
it was
2002. So you had the likes, I know The Bourne Identity came out, but you had the likes of Triple X, and you had all these big films coming out at the time. So it was a film really just reacting to the time. But Like if it's on the telly, I'll watch it. I'll put it on from time to time. It is a fun film, but on the grand scheme of things, it's definitely not my favourite Brosnan film. It's definitely not my favourite Bond film, but there's a lot of love for it here tonight. Lorenzo clearly loves the film.
Yeah.
all of it.
I love it.
It hits a lot of beats, but I think is there not a part in the film that they try and acknowledge all the Bond films? Did I read that up to that point? So I think you need to pay close attention to see it. But I think when they get into the scene with Q and things, there are all sorts of, I know, Rogers films and gadgets on the wall and all sorts of stuff. So
yeah,
but it's a really, really ambitious film. I totally wish Brosnan had got a fifth one, but it is what it is. Make of it what you will. I think time's maybe been better to it because, you know, it's quite lighthearted. It's a bit of fun. But yeah, if I had to pick between World's Not Enough and Die Another Day, I would definitely take World's Not Enough. But I won't ignore Die Another Day. There's a lot to like. There's a lot to like.
And I was going to say, we talked a bit about this, I think we did, in the No Time to Die. Sorry, the Being James Bond documentary review. Assuming that, you know, the Craig films are standalone, aren't they, in a way? Presumably, they'll have to go back to the general, we're just doing another Bond film, which means Dying of the Day was the last
one. That was it. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Yeah.
But go back to the original canon.
Well, yeah. I don't mean it, you know, directly follows, you know, 10 minutes after, like Quantum famously did. But yeah, Tom, in terms of like the legacy of these films, particularly Dying of the Day, like Moonraker's got so much more love recently because I think people appreciate that it is what it is. It's not trying to take itself seriously as a spy espionage Cold War thriller or something. It's just a fun Bond at the time. You've got to remember this was done in 79 after, of course, Star Wars and Superman, and it was that let's go to space kind of thing. Do you think Dying of the Day has a chance of having some kind of legacy like that maybe in 20?
God, I hope so. I want that movie to get praised in the Rotten Tomatoes score. I want that movie to get praised.
Well, we're praising it.
Firstly, I would say that I think Ian Fleming would be spinning in his grave from like doing it twice onwards. So, you know, what he thinks of Brosnan is probably irrelevant. I mean, and I love you.
What do you think? So same joke.
So far away. But I have this personal sort of feeling that there is no such thing, with very few exceptions, no such thing as an objectively bad film. Some people try and present the thing there is an objectively bad film. Like sort of even things like The Room, people say is objectively, but why do I enjoy watching it if it's objectively bad? I mean, yeah, it's not like it doesn't fit the standard criteria of, you know, cinematography and direction people would think is a good film. Yeah, I'm not going to pretend it's, you know, The Godfather, but it's enjoyable. And that's why I watch films, so is to enjoy them. And I think when I watch Dying of the Day, I really enjoy it. And I'm not going to, again, pretend that it's got the deep messages of some other films or Bond films even. But I mean... the last time I watched it, I pinpointed to myself the exact point went off the rails to me, which was the Bond Jinx conversation about mojitos and every line of dialogue.
Yeah.
Feels like it was written on set that day. And it was just, it's terrible.
People talk like in real life, isn't it?
No.
I agree that, like, I don't think Halle Berry is anywhere near as bad in that film as some people say she is. But that scene, like even I love Pierce Brosnan's Bond, and you could tell him he's struggling so much with it. And I think that's the bit where some people maybe started leaving the film, and maybe when the invisible car comes along, they don't give it as much.
People complain about that. People complain when the invisible car, or when he goes to Iceland, when the movie goes downhill.
Yeah, I totally disagree with that. I'm on board with it. But again, I was a child when I saw it, so maybe I've got like nostalgia, but I do love it. I genuinely love the invisible car. As you say, if you can accept a car turning into a submarine, why is it becoming visible like this weird thing? I don't understand that, this thing that people have about
it. To be completely honest, I look at Dying of the Day like Moonbreaker. Moonbreaker is a fun film. Like, exactly. It has spy thriller stuff in it, but when he goes out of space, I don't have no problem with it. I like the climax of that film, of it. It's fun.
I watch Bond films to be entertained and have fun. Yeah. I don't really watch them to get, you know, some sort of deep thing. If they can do that too, brilliant. But at the end of the day, what I take away from it is, did I enjoy spending 90 minutes to 2 hours of my life watching this? And it's like, almost invariably yes. And so it's like that's all I look for, really. So yeah, I hope that maybe in, like, what would it be, 40 years time, maybe people look back and say that, you know, we'll have people on whatever the equivalent in 4 years time.
Like Kaplan Dyson said in his review of Renaissance. He's yeah. He brought up he's brought up Brosnan in his second favorite point. He said one day Brosnan will get his Renaissance after Craig's 10 year. I think he will get appreciation for his amazing run as Bond. Yeah, I think it's going
to
happen.
Hopefully, I think it will be analogous a bit to the, I think, reassessment that has broadly occurred with Roger Moore. Because I remember very distinctly how much, like, Roger Moore was just held up as the negative example of Bond. How common it was where people would say, like Connery, I don't know what those Roger Moore movies were. They were just goofy for kids, couldn't take them seriously. Over and over again, there was a lot of just critical contempt for Roger Moore and those films. And I do think in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a reassessment and kind of an appreciation broadly for all of them. I mean, for all 7 Roger Moore films, deservedly so, for different reasons. A lot of it is just, you go back and you just get a lot of variety. I mean, you have Live and Let Die that touches on supernatural elements. You have Man with the Golden Gun that touches on, you know, kung fu movies at that time period. You have Moonraker that hits on Star Wars. I mean, it's just so many different, like, just genres and aesthetic elements just go into those films. And I think it's the same looking back with a lot of the Pierce Brosnan movies, of how it hits on all the notes of a lot of 90s action movies that I think are gradually just being more appreciated for the time and just for the style. And you go back and it touches just aesthetically on just a lot of cool elements of the time period that I think will and have been kind of coming back, and it's kind of a cyclical thing. That broadly, I do think that, you know, Brosnan will rise.
That should be the name of his documentary, Brosnan will. I'll just leave the, you know, before the Craig guys have just given up all hope of speaking, I'll just let George have a quick say on Dad, because he's a big fan of that film as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dying of a Date, well, I'm going to go to Wars on it first because, you know, that came out when I was 3. It's the first film I saw, not the age of 2, I think I was 4 or 5, on like a VHS recording. And a really interesting point I've been thinking in the last sort of 20 minutes is that when you look at like the generations of Bond fans, if you look at the Brosnan era, it's the video game era, right? Everyone that was young at that point probably had a console or a friend that had a console, and there were so many games coming out so often. I think there was another entry point into the Bond franchise for younger people. And that's something I had that we had The World Is Not Enough PS1 game. We had a VHS recording of it when it was on ITV. So I think that was a really big jump in. But when you get to Dying of a Date, and this is what's kind of come to me tonight, so I'm trying to get the words out right, that was 2002. And if you look at the state of cinema back then, you know, where we are now, we get superhero films 7-8 a year, which is fine. You can enjoy them. I enjoy them. I get a kick out of them. But when a Bond film came out, that was the event film. And it was every X amount of years, whereas obviously now we're waiting 6 years, but that's a different conversation. And, you know, Spider-Man 1 came out that year, a couple of months before, you'd had X-Men, you'd had Blade. But Bond was still the elusive big cinema experience. There hadn't been big franchises. I think Lord of the Rings was it the second one at that point? Chris would correct me if he was here. And of course, you've had Star Wars, which is engineered at kids as well in 2002, the prequel trilogy. I grew up with them and I'll defend them to the end of the earth as well. Maybe that's why I like Dying of a Day so much. So it's one of them where I think Dying of a Day came out at the right time for people of maybe a certain age. But obviously a big thing is, without getting into the Craig stuff yet, obviously cinema changed its landscape in the years that followed with it, post 9/11, all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to bore with the film essay, but a really big thing I think is Barbara Broccoli. Obviously when Cubby passed away, you know, it went to her and Michael G. Wilson. And if you think, she'd first worked on, was it Spy Who Loved Me, they said, but she essentially grew up on the set across her childhood. And Shayla spoke about the really good female characters. I don't think there's any coincidence that she was starting to have a massive input on these films. And I think when you look at the Brosnan era, so many beats have been taken, put into the Craig films. And we know that Barbara sees Daniel Craig as her Bond, as her baby, almost her creation. So I think as the years have gone by, you've seen, I'm not saying Brosnan's a test because I love him, but I think they took the elements from him that felt new, that felt fresh, applied it to Craig in a new era for a new audience. And I think that's where this big jump has been. And with Dying of a Day, I just feel that, because I love it, you know, it's got its issues. I'm not going to hide from them. You know, I can look at it from, you know, nostalgic, which I love, and critical, which, you know, there are issues, certainly. And it's one of them where I think it's just really trying to pay homage to 40 years of Bond. It just backfired. I don't think the audience was ready because they turned up, but cinema was slowly moving on. And when you jump to Skyfall for the 50th, you couldn't have two more different films being anniversary films. You'd know, you'd expect it to be the same. So I've just been like taking all this into my head recently, listening to everyone tonight. But to me, the Brosnan era is just incredible. And it's a shame he didn't get more, but I think his influence, he had another gateway for people with those games, with other things. And, you know, of course there were games beforehand, but you weren't getting games with, you know, Roger Moore's Lightless and his voice acting in it. And you weren't getting a game every year or two. And that was such a massive gap. And even jumping ahead to Craig's era, we got it early with Quantum Game. We had a Bloodstone, and they've just had the gap of silence since. And I don't think that's accommodated his era. So audience wise, there's not been gaps for new audiences to come in with Craig. And when they have, you know, if these kids now are getting 5 Marvel films a year and the superheroes they love, they pop up at least once a year now. You know, how many times has Downey Jr. played Iron Man in the 13 years? And we've had, what, 2 Daniel Craig Bond films in the time since Iron Man came out? So, yeah, trying to make like an observation with the sort of the modern eyes. But I just think, you know, taking all the context out of it, Brosnan's era is just superb. And, you know, there were issues, as I said, but I think it was almost the perfect era for Barbara Broccoli to get a hand on producing to see where she went next. I know that not everyone likes the Craig era, and that's fine. But I'm a big Craig fan. Obviously, you never near as much as Brosnan as I'll rep until the end of time. But I don't know if anyone's ever thought that. Just that cinema's evolved so much. Brosnan feels like the pre-superhero because he was a one-man army. He was going into bases, killing hundreds of people, and it was sick. And we all enjoyed it, and we have a good time watching it. But if you look at all those superhero films, the over-the-top CGI heavy ending that might not be fleshed out. It's just two people hitting each other. Well, Brosnan did that with Gustav Graves on an aeroplane, you know, with a giant laser. So
did he?
There's it's really interesting looking at cinema and where Brosnan ranks in it, because we said it in the video for Tomorrow Never Dies, but that's like happening today. That's real now. The power of the media now.
Yeah.
The Brosnan era has dated so well, story and thematically, whereas some of the earlier ones might not have. Obviously, contextually, Cold War, you know, you can't really do that now, but the Brosnan era has been really interesting as a look back almost 20 years later, which is terrifying to say it's almost 20 years ago as well.
Unbelievable points there, George. And the only thing I can take issue is, thankfully, we did have another Daniel Craig game where once and for all, we had him in License to Kill as in 007 Legends, which we all loved.
Played it. I remember that game came out, right? We do Skyfall video this week. I'll talk about it. But do you not remember Love Film? Did I used to rent games off there?
Yeah.
So there was a loophole where you delete your list, you get the new game. So I got 007 Legends and, you know, the 50th anniversary hype and it came. And it was like, the hell is this? And I hadn't seen License to Kill at this point because it was around the time I was going through the last one that I hadn't seen. And I remember realizing this is a really cool map. This is really cool. I was like, but why is Daniel Craig in Goldfinger with modern technology? And, you know, the fact we've not had a game since. And what, the company went bust, didn't they? They lost so much money on it. They got rid of most of their staff. So it's really sad because if you look at the last 10 years of gaming, the world would have been ready for a Bond game at any point. And they would have got so many new people. The Quantum of Solace game was amazing. Yes, it was Call of Duty, but it was Call of Duty in a Bond skin. And everyone at school loved it and all played it. And I platinumed it so I could one-up them all. So.
And I like Bloodstone. Bloodstone is like I don't say mixed with it's up there with it's a very great game. I always consider it a follow up after Quantum of Solace in some ways. Bloodstone.
That's underrated. I think we
oh super
that, didn't we in our episode, Sam? We covered that episode. But Rob, did you want to quickly say something before we move on to the Craig here? Which
it's quite an awkward one actually. I felt like I missed something, but David. You're wearing something, aren't you?
Oh yes.
I'm so sorry to ask this, but could
it's got something to. I'm sorry to cause a sweet distraction.
Well, it's a very sweet distraction, David.
From Octopussy.
Yeah.
There you go. Here you go.
Is it you? Yeah.
Look at that. Just a twirl. My word. Yeah.
I have got shorts on.
I did not mean to put you on the spot, but I could not see it. I'm so sorry, David. Thank you.
It's like I'll find any excuse to wear it.
Is it as comfortable as it looks?
It is like you're not wearing anything. Yeah.
But how much was it?
You really don't want to know.
Was it from the 007 store?
I'm afraid so.
Oh. I admit it's a little bit kinky.
Admit it.
I was like, this is the most ridiculous thing, you know, for not that I subscribe to the gender binary at all, but to buy a women's dressing gown from the 007 store. But we'd had a couple of martinis and my husband was like, no, you have to buy that. So, and then amazingly, we woke up the next morning and didn't actually feel that much buyer's remorse. So, yeah, it arrived about a week later and, yeah, we take it in turns to wear it. That's all I'm saying.
I just think it's brilliant. Right. Mrs. Parker needs to take serious notes at this point.
I think it should be great on everyone here. Everyone needs to try it. No, like from David to Rob, and then 1 month later to Goldfinger, etc.
It pairs really well with a Pierce Brosnan watch. Yeah, so there you go.
Oh.
Just repping the different eras. There you go. Really the best.
That's it for the third part of our anniversary special. Join us for the fourth and final part, where we discuss the legacy of Daniel Craig.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.